You are listening to Pod of Wonder, a podcast that creates a world using random Wikipedia articles and then plays a game in that world. I haven't introduced us the last two episodes, so that's my bad. This week we are concluding our game of Wanderhome. If you're listening to this the day it comes out, the Kickstarter for Wanderhome ends tomorrow morning. This is your last chance to back the game, so do not miss out. After this episode, we're going to be entering our postseason. We're going to be posting some outtakes, some more actual plays, and a few audio experiments, let's call them, before we get started on Season 5. They're a little different than what we normally do, but I hope you enjoy them. That's all the important stuff out of the way, so let's get on with the game.
Cullen is spending his morning kind of getting a lay of the island, kind of walking around the harbor. And along the way, he sees a ferry arriving with a disheveled-looking Bombi herder. They had anticipated all the Bombis to have already arrived. And so this person is clearly late. A special ferry had to be sent out for them to get their herd across the water. As he sees this person like unloading everything from their boat, he takes a moment to kind of offer them some assistance.
I think Maria might be the one who has not been an NPC yet.
We don't need to do the full NPC creation, at least, but we can give this person a species and a name.
Maybe a rabbit?
I like that.
Or it could be maybe a badger. That would be a little bit more taciturn.
Yeah, why don't I go ahead and roll the a random trait for this person, and you can see what animal you think would best fit for them.
Okay.
Okay, so they are a sweet animal.
Sweet animal.
My first thought was butterfly, but butterflies are bugs, right? So they're not real animals.
In our world, we've established that bugs are people, because we mentioned butterflies in another episode, so this person can definitely be a butterfly.
A butterfly. Would it be like sort of Alaskan unicorn butterfly, who's like very...
It's very... like flighty non sequiturs.
Right.
That would be a really interesting encounter, I think, for Cullen, because like he's a very straightforward and simple person and not really prepared to deal with somebody like that. Yeah, let's do it.
Jolly, jolly land of roar. Where are we? Hello there, friend. Hi, Bob. Where is the bomb? Where do we set Bombies?
I'm sorry. You are here for the Bombi Con.
No. I brought my herd. Oh, hello, stranger.
Yes or no? I heard both.
Do you use the bomb? Yes, the bomb. Yes.
Well, you are in luck, friend. I am accompanying some people who are at the convention. I can certainly direct you to where it is being held.
Luck is a lady tonight.
Yes, that is accurate. The god of luck is gendered female. You know what? Why don't you follow me? I'm not sure what we can do with your Bombies, but they are allowed to roam freely during the festival.
The Bombies will follow along the way. Follow the leader. Follow the leader.
Yes. Cullen puts on a bit of an exasperated smile and kind of leads you through the city. I think as we kind of like walk through the market area, you like how do you react to all of the different sights and sounds and things?
There is gold, there is magic, there is wild fascination. Everywhere I look, there's something new. What is this over here? What is that over there? Oh, what a delightful place this is.
I think all of the personal exasperation he might be having dealing with you, he does kind of take one of his quiet moments to just sort of watch you interacting with these various things and just seeing your kind of unbridled enthusiasm for things. He doesn't know you. He doesn't even know your name. This could be your first time seeing these things. It could be like how you react to them every time. But he definitely appreciates your kind of novel approach to things.
What's in a name? What's in a name? There are no names given to the wild things. Ooh, do you see this over here?
Oh, yes. Wow. Have you seen one of those before?
I have seen all the things before, all the, I've not seen anything before. I don't know.
Yes, this is actually an altar to Talk, the Chalk God. You see, you can write on it, and it easily erases, so you can send your prayers to Talk, or write down negative emotions and then erase them to kind of... You're supposed to feel the negativity kind of lifting from your soul.
Yeah, some people say that that they can offer you advice sometimes. It will just appear on the altar, but I personally haven't had that happen to me, but it sounds... exciting.
Pick up a little piece of chalk and start just drawing spirals and spirals and spirals and little puffs and circles and ovals and stars.
Cullen's eye kind of twitches. It's usually more verbal communications, words and things.
Words are constructs.
Okay.
Well, I guess if you're done, we can continue on to the convention center.
Oh, what's there? What's there? Is that
the BombiCon? The thing you're here for?
Yes, yes. Let's go there. Let's go there. Well, that is the place we should go.
Great. As kind of like a stress / fidget item, Cullen kind of frequently shuffles his Oracle deck, and like in an idle moment, he pulls out one of the cards, and it is that nameless ancient god whose card suddenly appeared in his deck one day, and he's not sure quite what meaning to take from this. Like, it's not something that's ever happened before. He just kind of like looks quizzically at the card and then up at this butterfly.
What are you doing? What are you doing? Why are you stopping? Why are you stalling?
Oh, sorry. Just trying to consult some friends. That's all.
So many things to see. So many things to do.
We arrive at the convention center. Well, here you are. Registration is right through there. I think my friend should be done registering by now. So if you see a turtle in there, that's my friend, and they're good people. You can say hi to them.
I'll fly over to the registration.
Hell, Gary, you must be the last. Oh, what was her voice again? Damn it!
It's something like that.
It was old. It was old. Hey, Gary, you must be the last one.
Last or the first? It's hard to say. What is time? I don't know.
Yep, we get one of you every year.
Zooming back to Cullen's point of view, I think he's noticed for the first time as he's leaving this butterfly at the desk that all the Bombies with the butterfly have been perfectly well-behaved, like walking in like two columns, the picture of order. And he like looks at the row of Bombies and back up at the butterfly and shrugs.
There's wisdom in your innocence, graceful falling into the jewels of mistakes. Choosing is your eloquence. A thousand roads and not one right way.
Do we meet back up together later in the day? Maybe like stumbling across Harold when we like break for lunch or something?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm thinking like right before the competition, because timing wise, especially, I think we're kind of, our next segment should be kind of the competition and the end, and maybe kind of consolidate the potential reunion of Percy and Rambles.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe they're judging the competition, or Percy is, and it's rumored that Rambles might be one of the judges.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll just kind of roll those two things together, but we meet up right before the competition to maybe help in whatever way we can in a fun montage fashion.
Harold, what are you doing to support Mervyn in the Bombi competition?
Harold is hella confident, but he's also very aware that he does not have any particular skills that are helpful directly to shearing a Bombi, and he is kind of he's trying to psych out the competition by being super passive aggressive and issuing really terrible kind of like negging backhanded compliments. Like, oh, that's so brave. You're doing so great, especially with a Bombi with crooked legs like that. You're going to do super, and would just move on to the other one. He's also got his umbrella that he's kind of trying to flap around as a distraction without realizing that it actually absorbs rain. It is just kind of a fun umbrella for him, but it's been absorbing water this entire time. So it's just, he's doing more harm than he realizes, because it's just kind of spurting out extra water, which kind of hinders the shearing and wool making process.
Stella, what are you doing?
So I think before the competition, there was a fan mail kind of booth that Stella like got roped into manning. It was kind of like you can volunteer for this convention and have like free tickets for it. What is the fan mail like? Deal with Percy and Rambles. I'm imagining Percy might read and answer every fan mail. Rambles may be the other end of the spectrum, but I just wanted to confirm that with you. Maybe this is like the perfect chance for, you know, all the fan mail that Percy has written for his fans to be on one place, and Stella was just handing it out to the, you know.
I love the concept of fan mail as being from the creator to the fans. Like, Percy writing out letters to, like, particularly active and engaged online followers, and that's very cute.
Percy is very involved. I want to say Rambles actually has read a lot of it, but it's through giant spurts where he realizes, oh, I should be better. I should be a better person. This is the time. I'm going to read through all of these and issue a response, and then just gets sadder as he reads through them.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of sets him back a bit, because he realizes, like, wow, I used to do something. I used to have dreams and goals.
Yeah. I was on TV.
Exactly. But now I'm just kind of profiting off this kind of cult reputation.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind. These letters are making me sad. Let me just kind of go on another. I'm going to go windsurfing across islands for 3 weeks. And by that, I mean windsurf very little, and then just hire a boat to take me around.
I think there's very much like a large Percy stack and a smaller but like maybe thicker enveloped Rambles stack that different attendees can kind of go to, and like they've probably been sent a ticket or confirmation, or maybe people just come up and ask, hey, is there any mail for me?
Stella, having read through like the names of all the letters, just for some reason has this catalog crazy memory of being like, yes, I remember that. Yes, it's right through here. Yep, there you go. And just like a machine.
And in what way does this help Mervyn?
Oh, just the ones that, you know, didn't quite get a letter. Stella would pull him aside and be like, hey, look, it's okay. It's okay. Why don't you look at the competition, and there's a real shoo-in for a winner if you want to root for them. Mervyn, just go look for them Bombies. There's a, what you call it, a vote in, you know. Like
a fan vote.
Fan vote, that's it. That's the one, yes, the fan vote, yes.
Audience vote,
yes,
yeah.
Audience vote. So I'm just going to be like, time for the audience vote, Mervyn the Turtle. Audience vote, that's it. That's the one.
Cool. So I think what Cullen does is he does a series of rituals and kind of prayers for Ravel, the god of tangled yarn. Ravel's domain kind of covers everything about yarn, from like its creation to the final product to when it's still on the animal. So Cullen kind of mixes up in like a mortar and pestle, just some yarn and glitter, just kind of like mashing that down into kind of a big fuzzy mess, and like going down the line of Mervyn's Bombies that he's having enter into the competition, and just sort of like dotting them with this mass of yarn that doesn't quite stay on. It mostly just sort of like rolls off of the thorax. What's a bug part?
Yeah.
He can see the blessing of Ravel being anointed onto that Bombi, and it seems to stand with a little more confidence and purpose. Ooh. I think I'm going to spend the token I have to use that move, reveal something hidden about the person in front of you, ask them what it is. But in this case, I'm going to ask Mervyn about something hidden by one of the Bombies. As I'm going down the line, I stop and I kind of pull one of these Bombies out of line and lead it over to Mervyn. And I say, "Mervyn, this Bombi has something that it would like to tell you." And he kind of like glances down to the Bombi, nods sagely, glances back up at Mervyn. "So you understand. What is this secret that this Bombi has?"
"It's wool feels familiar. Like something I haven't touched in a long time. Maybe this one had a name?"
"Is this, Fartstink, or whatever the name was? Of that, like, an offspring of Fartstink? The champion Bombi? What was its name, Gina?"
"It was Poopstink.
Poopstink.
Poopstink, six-time champion. Ooh, that was one talented Bombi.
Thank you, Constance."
"My pleasure. I'm always here when you need me, tidbits and such."
"Why did I remember Constance but not Poopstank?"
"Poopstank's got one of those elusive names, you know? You've got to have met him to really understand why he was named that. Well, so fitting."
"The reason is poo. And that was a reference to Hoobastank, and I will leave now."
"Good, thank you." feel free to veto this, Maria, but maybe like the camera kind of zooms out and looks around, and we kind of realize that a lot of eyes are on you and your Bombies. And like Cullen kind of takes a look, is like, "Mervyn, are you like really famous in the world of Bombi herding?"
"Am I?
I mean, people seem really like they're watching you, and they're like, I keep hearing the name Poopstank, like son of Poopstank."
"There is a certain aroma about this Bombi, for sure." "It's a good aroma. I enjoy it."
"Does explain why Argus thinks he's your rival, though."
"Of course I'm their rival."
Oh God. Whoa.
"Oh, well, hello there, young fellow. Have we met?"
"Don't give me that passive-aggressive crap. I'm always around when you least expect it."
"I don't think I expect much of anything."
"You clearly expect you're going to win, which you won't."
"I'm just going to put up my Bombies. They're good Bombies. Putting up my Bombies, see what happens."
"Well, we'll let the judges decide. Doesn't smell like you've got a chance."
"I thought everyone liked the way this Bombi smelled."
"Whatever, I'm moonwalking away!" I just established that's how he exits a room, just moonwalking away.
Stylish.
"Regardless, Mervyn," and Cullen is about to offer some kind of thought-out advice, and Then he thinks back to his time with the butterfly, and instead he says,
you know what? You've apparently gotten quite far on your own. I'm just going to let you do you. Maybe that's the best sort of action at this point.
I'm not sure that's true. These forms that I have to fill in sort of throw me for a little loop.
You still haven't turned those in yet?
I don't know what to put in some of these boxes.
Mervyn, if you're not registered, you can't participate in the competition. Harold! Stella! Emergency! Come here!
Yes, I'm here, I'm here, I'm coming here. Yes, what's up?
What's up?
Mervyn still hasn't turned in his forms to register for the convention. If he's not registered, he can't compete.
Give me those forms. I'm an expert in bureaucracy and filling stuff out. Come here. I got you. I got you back.
I know the bomb beast fairly well. I think I can fill out that part. Harold, when we finish these forms, go, like, slip them into their stacks, create a distraction, and make sure they don't notice that we're turning these in super late.
I was going to head over that way to see if they had any snacks for sale, because the ones around here under the tents are a little pricey and or just for bombies. So, I will definitely go over there while I'm asking for snacks.
$12 for French fries is absurd. They're crinkle cut, the worst kind of fry.
It is, and I'm pretty sure they got the cheaper French fries up where they got the tickets. I'll let y'all know.
Nope, gotta argue. Steak fries are the worst. Crinkle cut at least resembles a fry. I mean, steak cut, that's just half a wedge of potato. Sorry. Concentrating. Back and forth.
What kind of distraction do you create to slip these forms in unnoticed?
So Harold is bumbly and nonsensical, but he is very serious about these snacks now. He doesn't stand for that crinkle cut bullshit. He is going in for the steak fries or the curly fries. Just something other than what they got. Because it's not worth $12, and he's getting very emphatic about that, almost to the point where now he's like enjoying any sort of rise he gets out of the other person, and it's taking him further with it, and as they're getting angrier, he's just easily slipping in that piece of paper. But he's still serious about his argument, because for $12, I should get a bucket of whatever potato-based product I desire. $12 for a tiny paper cup full of fucking crinkle cut. That is some bullshit. And you charge extra for sauces. What is that?
Looky here, Harold. I'm a ragged that run. Come on, Dragon. I'm in charge of registration and snacks. We're severely understaffed. I just had to whip up what I could find. I gotta be in three places at once. I just got done registering the most flighty darn butterfly while trying to maintain a profession. I'm at wit's end there, Harold. I tell you.
Ma'am, I get your plight, and I absolutely do, but don't you think you deserve better than $12 crinkle cut fries? Because I know we all do, and I know you do too.
It's what we could have bargained for with the food supply company. Look, I'm just selling it. I've got near no control after the order's put in. It's what's here on the island.
Listen, you've got oil, you've got something to heat it with, and you've got some sort of vegetable or starch you can chop up in a shape that is not fucking crinkle cut. I will do it just plainly towards the kitchen.
All right.
Let's go. Let's make this.
You know what? You're right. I can't take on the extra job of also prepping the food that I've got to sell while I'm registering everybody at this convention. Why'd you come on back? I'm gonna get you employee access, which is me just giving you my access card because I'm apparently the only employee in this whole convention.
Tell you what, here's the $12 I would have spent on the other crinkle cut, and I just kind of pull out wet, like, single dollar bills and a few coins and just plop them on the table, take the access card, and move on down towards the kitchen.
Did you steal those from the fountain?
Don't question why my pockets might be wet, all right? It might be part of my act. You know what? Fuck it. That's part of my act. You have to believe that now. The reason there are wet dollar bills in my pocket are because it's all part of my bit.
Fair.
I definitely did not dive into the fountain. You didn't see that happen.
That looks like a activity that is not prescribed by the Sweater Island
Peoples, I'm going to have to take you in.
Can't hear you. I'm moonwalking back into the kitchen with the good French fries.
I mean, that is one of your moves. Somehow managed to squeeze yourself out of trouble. So, can't question that. You can't question why the pockets are wet. You can't question squeezing out of trouble. Them's the rules. Yeah. A moonwalk wipe to Mervin getting ready to display the bombies and receive judging.
All right. Mervin is walking around the flock, smoothing down hairs there and there, fluffing up the cheek hairs, whispering to each one, "Yeah, yeah, you're the most beautiful thing I've ever seen." Nervously, then, out of the sight of the bombies, nervously rubbing his hands together and watching to see what happens.
I like the idea that Mervin speaks at a normal pace to his bombies. Like, I'm not sure what that means for his character, but it's a very interesting note.
Well, because Mervin doesn't speak in words to his bombies. Mervin speaks in heart and movement.
Okay. So it's more like subtitles for Mervin rather than what you actually said.
Mervin speaks slowly to the world in general because the language that Mervin speaks the most is Bombi language, which is touch. Kind of having to remember how to speak to others that aren't Bombis.
So when you are ready for your turn, Mervin, you're kind of led into a fairly like small but well-lit room and kind of sitting behind a table with a gingham red and white check tablecloth is a corgi in a sweater vest with a small like set of spectacles balanced on his nose. And kind of next to him, very conspicuously, there is an empty chair where another judge is supposed to be, but is currently not. The corgi clears his throat. Yes, I see from your paperwork here you are Mervin. And who is this here?
Boomby.
Boomby. Okay. Sorry, the form was blank, so I didn't quite know what to say. There's a pretty well documented pedigree here, so this is really exciting for me. I had never had the opportunity to see a poop stank in action, but to get to interact with one of his descendants is a personal excitement for me.
From nearby, you're going to hear a nerd, and from further away, "Oh my god, is that Rambles?
Oh,
I'm upset I didn't get judged. I demand a recount," before Argus is tossed to the side.
Rambles moonwalks onto the scene.
Rambles thinks he moonwalks, but it's more of a backward stumble right into the chair as if he planned it that way. "Oh, hey. That's a very fluffy looking moonbee right there. What? How does it look so fluffy?"
"Hi, Rambles. You're late as usual."
Yeah, but this and I'm a little buzzed and sleepy. And so this moonbee, why is it so fluffy?"
"That's what we're here to do, is to judge the floofiness."
"Hey, it's A+ floofy. I just want to know a secret, because I need some of that floof. You know, there's one test we really haven't do with these guys, and that's how good they are to cuddle."
Yeah.
I'm gonna try to like just drunkenly cuddle up to that movie and lay down with it, use it as a pillow.
Mervin takes his paw and strokes along the belly and upholds the butt end for presentation. Doesn't know exactly what he's doing, but sees the interest in the fluffiness and accepts.
Oh, that's a fluffy body. Purse, it's been a while. I want to talk more, but right now I need to lay down on this fluffy guy. Just, oh my God. Oh, you're so fluffy. Oh, this guy. Oh, he wins. He wins. Purse, he wins. I come here mostly to say I done some wrong. I could say that to you face to face. I've been dealing with some stuff, but I'm sorry, Percy. I'm sorry, but also that guy wins. Just, that's the fluffiest thing I've ever slept on, and just by that alone.
Right. Mervin, do you have any commentary or notes on Boomby here?
Well, Boomby has spent his whole life walking, eating the grass. People have been saying they win medals whenever they go up against other Boombies, but that sounds right.
Great.
Hey, Shoes, you know what, you win. There was another guy here who was strong, but his guy was not so happy and so floofy. And by happy and floofy alone, your guy is the win.
Deeply unpleasant.
What was it, Artis? That guy was an asshole. I wasn't even here, but I could hear him shrieking. And oh God, it was sad. It was sad.
Well, we do have other competitors to judge, but you know what? You can just ride Boomby out, and I can continue.
Can I turtle guy Marvin Merlin? Can I ride your dude?
Just don't ride him too far.
No promises. I got his tiny camera. We're going to make a new series. And it's called Rambles Doesn't Throw Up on Things. Tending title.
Okay, as long as you don't throw up on my Boomby.
Yes, he's a good boy. You good boy.
True.
To the next drinks. To the next drinks, Scott. I'll give you half my drinks.
I think we can maybe flash forward to the shearing and knitting part, and like Mervin just kind of nonchalantly has like a big trophy next to him.
That sounds absolutely right.
Hope it's not too heavy. Can't be carrying too much along.
Harold busts in. Everyone, I've realized that the 13th bar was the friends you made along the way.
Where have you been all day? We have been knitting and shearing these Bombies without you.
Oh, you mean I haven't been getting the number one Bomby champion? This guy who is part of a frat and part of a very powerful Bomby ranching family. So drunk he forgot the competition. I'm sorry, but you're welcome.
Cut over to see Gunther the Otter passed out with a bunch of like corporate agriculture executives looking very displeased. I don't know. That's dumb.
No, that sounds absolutely right. That's 100% what happened.
Yeah.
It's like it was its own like terrible B plot of an Adam Sandler movie.
Cullen's Oracle deck slips out of his hand as he's been like, with one hand kind of like folding up sweaters and the other one just kind of like fidgeting with it. And that ancient unknown god card kind of falls and rolls out. And at the bottom kind of magically appears the friends you made along the way.
Zoom in and credits.
I hate it. Yes.
Yeah, that's like the end. That's the perfect end point. And not gonna lie, I'd play as these characters again.
Well, totally. This is the way I feel about every character that I play in anything. I'd absolutely play it again. I am now emotionally attached to it.
Wear out your welcome. It suits you to stay with the weight of all your wondering chosen baby can't look back. Eyes like the ocean, you walk like the thunder. Maybe I can heal your life in every step you take. Hey, in every step you take.
Why don't we do an end credits montage of where this group is, like maybe heading off of the island or like a couple months down the line?
I'm going to say Harold keeps coming back as a kind of stand-up, one of the local bars, but he knows to go on when people are their drunkest, and like he's found his sweet spot of success.
Cullen, maybe we pick up with a few months later, or maybe even years, like as he's gone through his journey of finding new homes for these old gods, as he's sitting down like the last card and reaches into the little case where he keeps the Oracle deck and just like slides the lid off to see that it's empty, and a smile appears on his face as he closes it off and walks off into the sunset.
Stella keeps doing her thing, sending letters to all corners of the earth. She's got a few unopened letters. The packages that I mentioned in character creation, I think it's just like three very short scenes of her like getting to them. Bulk in a hidden city, and the oath to the king of the floating mountain, and finally the love letter to the Blue Jay.
I think maybe it ends with like you knocking on the Blue Jay's door, like letter in hand.
Mm-hmm.
What about Mervin?
Mervin goes back to his regular life, herding the bombies, feeling a little good about himself because he feels like he might have done something that was good. Not sure. It doesn't matter. It's a good life, a wholesome life.
Argus looks back with in a dramatic anime fashion, suddenly having grown a mustache over the last couple months, dramatically backlit, and says, next year I'll win.
This has been Pod of Wonder. You can find us on Twitter at Pod of Wonder, and you can email us at podofwonder@gmail.com. The music you heard today is Move Like the Ocean, acoustic, by Wildlight, edited for use under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike license.